And I think that was the first time that I really felt like I was giving him a place where he could belong that wasn't just locked in our apartment all the time.
Dog people, welcome back to Rescued by a Dog, the podcast about dogs that have actually saved their owners' lives. As always, I am Laura, host of the podcast, and if you love the podcast, I need once again to plea for your help. Can you give just $5 to help keep Rescued by a Dog going? There are two easy ways to do this. First, you could just Venmo me $5 or whatever amount you want to send at the handle LauraBama. That's L-A-U-R-A, B as in boy, A, M as in mother, A. Or you can go to patreon.com/rescuedbyadogpodcast. Again, that's Patreon, spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. So patreon.com/rescuedbyadogpodcast. If you join the Rescued by a Dog community on Patreon, your $5 per month will help me to continue sharing these beautiful, uplifting stories. Today, we're going to hear three stories from men who overcame great hardship thanks to the love of their dogs. First up is Jeff, who rescued a reactive boy named Wesley Crane from the shelter Austin Pets Alive, not knowing how deeply Wesley would transform his life. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Jeff. How you doing? Oh, there you are. I can see you now. Thank you so much for doing this.
Of course. Yeah, I'm excited. I love talking about Wesley Crane, so this is right up my wheelhouse.
Why don't you start by telling me the name of your dog and what he looks like?
Yeah, so his name's Wesley Crane, and I think it's the, like, funniest name. I don't know why he has a surname, like, and nobody that I spoke to could remember why he got named that. And I, like, Googled around, and it's not, like, a character name, or it's, like, no. At this point, nobody knows why he has two names, but we thought it was so endearing. So he's Wesley Crane. And he is a plot hound mix with a lot of pit in him. So he's got the big squishy like butt head and like a kind of a long hound nose. And he's a pretty typical brindle color. So he's that like brown with tiger stripes. And he just looks like he's super cute, but in like a really doofy sort of way. Like paws that are too big, head that is too big, tail that he has no control over. Just looks like a little sausage with a big head on the end. He is like he has separation anxiety, and he jumps up and he mouths whenever he gets excited, and it's like cute the first time he does it. When you're like 2 weeks in and it's like you're trying to leave the house and he's untying your shoelaces and stuff, like you're like Wesley. So yeah, he's definitely a handful. Things in my life when we got Wesley, I felt like we're pretty good. Like, you know, me and my partner, Casey, we had founded this business together. But I had come from, I don't want to say a messy divorce, but I had been divorced a few years before me and my partner got together. In that divorce, it was pretty sudden and pretty surprising. It was like no incidents, but it was just like one day my ex-wife was like, this isn't working, and took all of our stuff and left. And among our stuff, we had two cats that we shared. And I was like, I am a huge animal person. I'm a huge bleeding heart. So like I was head over heels for these cats. Like I just adored them. Like I, you know, posted photos of them every day. And like, we were just like, they were my little babies, and in that moment, they were just like gone, and it absolutely broke my heart. It was like that like year was some of the hardest I've ever been through. You know, me and my ex-wife had formed our whole adult lives together. Like we got together when we were like 18, 19, and we had been together for a decade, and we had built like everything together, and all of a sudden it was gone, and I was having to rewrite my identity, and I was having to rewrite my living situation, and I was trying to like maintain the jobs that I had when suddenly I didn't have a car and I didn't have a place to live. But the absolute worst part of it was losing my cats. And I think I walked away from that, you know, pretty emotionally scarred, and I had sort of decided like, well, that's it for me pets. Like, I can't do it anymore. Like, it hurt too bad. I don't want to, you know, feel lost like that again. And I was initially very resistant to the idea of fostering or adopting a dog. It was like, you know, here we go again. Like, now me and my partner are going to share a pet that I'm going to fall in love with. And then, you know, who knows how that's going to go. So when we first met him, we were talking about fostering him, and they brought us out to meet him. They warned us, like, he's a high anxiety dog. You know, you've got to approach him like this. And you know, he's not always great with strangers. And he walked over and he sat down, like, on Casey's foot and just, like looked up at us and let us rub him and pet him. Like, he was super, super sweet when we first met him. And, you know, I fell in love with him instantly. I remember when we first brought Wesley Crane home, and he was like, you know, he's looking back at it now. I know him well enough now that I'm like, oh, this dog was super anxious. But we sat him down on the couch, and he sat down between us, and he was just like frantically licking Casey's face and then my face and back and forth. And we have this photo of the two of us laughing, and Wesley's between us. And I remember my partner looking at it, and she was like, I have never seen you smile like that before. And at this point, she and I have known each other for 8 years. We've been together for 4 or 5 at this point, you know, like, and to realize, like, she's never seen me express joy in the entire time we'd been together. Like, it hit me where I was like, oh, this is something real. Like, this is a moment in our lives that is about to change the way we exist as a couple, and the way we exist is now like a family. I think that he opened up my ability to really try to, like, love and connect with people and things again. Like, I mean, and when I say things, I mean, like, activities and interests, and obviously him, and even my partner. Like, looking back, I would never say that I didn't love my partner, but I don't think I did a good job of expressing that. Like, I think I was logistically a good partner to her, but, like, emotionally, was I present and was I vulnerable and was I available? I don't think that I was. He put me in a position where it was like, okay, you say you want this dog, you say you love this dog. The only way to do that right is to allow yourself to be vulnerable to this animal in a way that you had I had actively decided I would never do again. He deserved somebody who could do that for him. So it forced me to step up and try to be that human being. He is, you know, truly the best thing that ever happened to me and my partner. So I do an overnight twice a week. And whenever I come home from that, it's like, I unlock the door and I always, like, I look down, and as soon as I open it, his little head, like, pops out. And then when I come inside and he, like, sticks to me and he's jumping a little bit and he's not all the things he's not supposed to do. But what he's doing is he's waiting anxiously for me to sit down on the couch. And I'm trying to, like, take my backpack off and stuff. And the moment I sit down on the couch, he rockets in and he, like, jumps over the arm of the couch and he'll, like, crash onto the cushions beside me and then just start, like, sniffing and licking. And then he'll, like, lay across your lap. He just lays his entire 75 pounds across your body. So sweet. And in some ways so humbling, because I know that there are days where I don't give him that energy back, you know, like if I've had a long day or I'm in a rush, or sometimes he's obnoxious about it. And then I catch myself like, hey, man, no one will ever be excited to see you like this. So, like, take a knee and, like, appreciate it and, like, give it back to him because he deserves it. So I was just looking for places, like, where can I take this dog where he can experience, like, running around and have, like, the world around him belong to him for a little bit, without other people or other dogs, like, setting him off or invading his space or anything like that. But I found this like campus behind a little like special needs hospital that was, it's like this massive stretch of green grass, and no one is ever out there. And it's perfect because it's like huge and shaded, and there's tons because like there's tons of like smells and stuff out there, but no people or other dogs. We went on this big family walk, and I remember while we were out there, we found a tennis ball on the ground that presumably like some of the kids at the hospital had been playing with or something. And it was like, we were so far away from everything, and there were two of us, and we were along a fence line. We just had this like 10-minute play time where one of us would throw the ball, and Wesley is like completely untethered, which he never, ever, ever gets to do normally. And he'd go and grab the ball, and then he'd bring it to me, and then I'd throw it back. And we're both like, as you said, present in this moment, which neither of us are great about. And it just felt like, oh my God, like look at not just him, but look at us. Like we're all playing together as a family in this like special secret spot that we've carved out. The way I like to say it is that if you've ever had a highly reactive dog, you quickly learn that the world is not built for them, that like leash laws don't mean anything, that they're not like, you are going to, off leash dogs are going to charge your dog no matter what the law says, that people are going to approach them no matter how many yellow flags you have on your leash, that like every day it's going to feel like your dog doesn't belong in this world. And I make it my goal to find these little secret places and times that I can carve out of the world and say, for 30 minutes, buddy, this spot belongs to you. And I think that was the first time that I really felt like I was giving him a place where he could belong that wasn't just locked in our apartment all the time.
If Wesley Crane could understand human English, what would you like to say to him?
I want him to know that all the things that we do to like restrain him or keep him inside or to keep him away from certain things that are in the moment exciting to him, I need him to understand that those are for his safety. That on top of obviously just telling him how much we love him and how much we care for him. I do want to tell him to stop untying my shoelaces, but I don't think he'll ever do that.
Now we're going to hear from Michael, whose childhood was lacking in comfort until he met Sage. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm so glad to meet you. Okay, so tell me, what is the name of the dog we're going to talk about today? What's their name? What do they look like?
His name was Sage, and he was a probably about 50-pound Australian Shepherd mix. We got Sage when I was a kid from some friends of ours that had brought him into their home, and then they had to move for something and couldn't keep him, and asked if we wanted to take him instead. And I was like, you know, my brother and I were super excited about that. So we're like, oh, heck yeah, you know, let's do this thing.
How old were you?
I was about 5.
What was going on in your life?
I had an older brother who was real sick and had by that time, I think he had already had his second open heart surgery, and learning disabilities, all kinds of things. And, you know, super intelligent, but just didn't learn in a traditional way. So it stopped, you know, life around our house was, it wasn't good for me. I was kind of backburnered quite a bit. I don't, you know, at the time I couldn't have said it this way, but I felt like I didn't matter. I felt like I wasn't worthy of love and attention from my family. So this little fuzz ball came in. I mean, he was quite young. He was still a little puppy. And the energy was just, it was something fantastic. And I didn't know such a thing could exist. He was just a spitfire and fun. And I can say now intuitive. right? He wouldn't know who to go to, who needed some loving at the time in the house. He quickly became my dog, if you know what I mean. I gave him more attention and he gave me more attention, and we spent a lot of time together.
So what did that feel like for little you at the time when you first got him, to have something to engage with like that?
It felt like love. It felt safe. Like, you know, like I mattered to somebody. Move forward a little over 6 years and, you know, big disruption in the house. My dad left. Hadn't seen, you know, he was still living with us, but we didn't really see him much because of his work. He was literally gone all the time. And then one day, our mom calls us down and says, "Hey, your father has something to say to you." And he couldn't even look us in the eye. He just picked up his bags and walked out the door. And somehow I got it in my head that it was my fault he left. You know, I felt maybe I was a disappointment. You know, I don't know, but I got it in my head that it was my fault. And I started having suicidal ideation. And as I changed emotionally, and then, you know, my mood and the way I held myself energetically, Sage would show up more and more. He would come and seek me out. He could sense that something wasn't right. And if it wasn't for that dog, I wouldn't be here today. Right after my dad left, I don't remember if it was the same day or not, but I was sitting outside and just despondent, right? Unconsolable. I didn't want my mom talking to me or touching me or being near me at all. And he just kind of, he crept up and then he got a little closer and then he got a little closer. And then he sat next to me and he just slowly leaned into me. And we just leaned our heads together. He's like, "Nah," he's like, "I got you. We don't have to do anything. We're just going to sit here." And I could be sad, and I knew I was going to be okay. He just kept doing that for a long time until I felt better. And, you know, I could sit and talk with him when I couldn't share my feelings with other people, because, you know, you already pointed to some of it. They want to fix, right? They want to, you know, give you advice. And I just needed to be able to express myself somehow. And I could talk to this dog, and I knew he got it somehow. He would just reach one paw up and put it on my, you know, my arm or my leg, and he would just hold it there while he was looking at me. It was the most amazing thing. And it was almost like a bubble was just created around us, and everything else just didn't matter. I would lay down with him, like on the couch or on the bed. And there's actually a picture that my mom took of me. I was wearing jeans and cowboy boots, and I was laying on the bed with my arm draped over him. And I just remember that day. This was probably 2 years later, and my brother had been paralyzed, and I don't know. It was like I went somewhere else. I just laid down in the bed with him and threw my arm over him. And I just fell asleep, and it was like this blissful thing. It was like, it was peace. I found peace amidst all this chaos. We went to this canyon. This is in San Diego. And we went for a photo shoot of just my mom, my brother, and I with Sage. And he was just in heaven. He was just in heaven because, you know, he could just run around, and there's a creek and trees and stuff to jump over and, you know, animals to chase. And I'd never seen him have so much fun. He looked like a stallion, like from far off. He was fast. He could jump. He could clear a 6-foot fence.
Do you feel like Sage is still in your life?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think he came back as my dog, Darby. So back in 2017, my brother passed. He finally passed away. And at the time, I had this little rescue dog. He was a little pit bull mix from a dog fighting thing. And I was just beside myself. I was, you know, I was in pain and I was, you know, crying and writhing around. And I was actually scared because I didn't know what was going on. It was all this stuff that had built up that I had never been able to release. Well, it was starting to come out. And after I finally calmed down a little bit, this little dog crawls up on me. This little pit bull crawls up and lays across my chest. And then I felt something energetically I'd never felt before in my life. And I knew something was different. I knew something was different. And after that time, I realized I didn't like how I was showing up in the world, you know, who I was and how I was acting. And so I made this massive change. I've been on this incredible journey ever since. And now I've created these businesses around dogs. And it's because of these dogs that helped me learn how to heal myself. There's so much wisdom that we already have, but we just don't know how to get to it. We don't know how to open that door for ourselves. And I found out that for a lot of guys, that dog is the key. I mean, it's just fantastic. You wouldn't think, because we think we're so smart, you know, ooh, me, mighty human. It's funny. Dogs are, they have this other level of intelligence that we just don't understand. We are accepted on every level by a dog, right? They don't care if we have hair or a big belly or how we dress or what we drive or where we live or what we, none of it. None of the things that we judge ourselves and others around. It doesn't even come into the awareness of a dog. So right there, you know, they're like little magicians and they can hold this incredible space for us. And if we're willing to notice and willing to listen to how they actually live and move throughout the world, we could learn a ton.
Finally, we'll hear from Peter, who lost his way until he met his new best friend, Tiva. Hello?
Hey, Laura, can you see me, hear me? There we go.
I can now. It's Peter, right?
Yes, it is. Nice to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you. Thank you for wanting to be on the podcast.
Yeah. And I've got medium-sized T, as I call her, next to me. She loves to come in the music room / office and just kind of sit. So there's Tiva.
Oh, hi, baby. She's so pretty. Such a pretty pity.
He says, where's that noise coming from?
Can you describe for people who are just listening?
Yeah, sure. I call her medium-sized T. No, you don't do that. So Tiva is a 49-pound pit bull terrier. And she was surrendered to a place called Lost Our Home. So they think she was about 7 years old when she was surrendered. But she's silver with kind of a white nose and white tuxedo, as I call it. So, and now she's licking the stickers on my desk.
How old is she now?
I think she might be about 7.5.
Did you have any issues adjusting to each other when you brought her home?
Yes, definitely. My previous dog had passed away and I was just so distraught, you know, just was crying all the time. I mean, I don't have kids. I'm 45. So Bodhi was my son. I didn't know what the point was. And actually I was diagnosed bipolar too, when I was 32. So I wasn't sleeping. I was crying in bed all night. I was crying in the car. I wasn't taking care of myself. It was a dark place. It's like no amount of drugs, alcohol, food, you know, whatever. No, you can't fill that void lost by a loved one. I was like, my weekends were totally shot. Like when I would, and you know, I'm not in my 20s, I'm not in my 30s anymore. I don't bounce back after a night of going out. I life just didn't seem to have any meaning without him here. And I already have struggled for years and years where, you know, it's the story that is repeated by millions of musicians where, you know, hey, we almost made it. We had the songs. And I stopped doing a lot of that. And I wanted to figure out a way to do something good versus just going to happy hour and drowning my sorrows. And I thought, you know, why not kind of do something in Bodhi's honor and adopt an older dog that would have possibly a hard time finding a home, like a pit bull. And we met Tiva with her foster parents in a park, and Tiva just ran right up to me, and I got down and I said, "Oh, hello, Tiva. You know, I'm Peter," or I don't know. Maybe I said that. I don't know. I started petting her. She was, you know, facing me. And then Angela turned the corner. She said she saw me with Tiva on the ground. It brought tears to her eyes because I had a big smile on my face. She's behind me looking out the window. It's not even open. She's always interested in something. Yes, sweetie. And she likes it when I talk to her. Yes, I know. She's just staring at me. Yes, she's such a sweet. I know. Now she's pawing at me. Let me put my attention towards our conversation here. But, yeah, I knew that things were going to be okay because I just bought a bass guitar. I write, or used to write, and I'm beginning to again, on acoustic guitar and voice. And I was sitting in here near a drum kit that I have, and I was sitting on the drum stool, and I had the bass, and I was just, you know, kind of playing a little bit, trying to learn like finger picking. And she just came in and sat down next to me and then laid on the floor and kind of stretched out and just sat there and laid there. And I thought, now that's a connection that I've never had. My goal is to try and get back into doing music, because what is the point? Like, my mom has this story about how I climbed up to the piano and was like playing when I was like, could barely walk. We were writing last night, and she was under the desk I'm sitting at now and started coming up with something. And I started singing this melody, and she was just kind of relaxing with her eyes open. And then at some points, she was looking at me while I was singing, like she was enjoying it, like I was serenading her. She makes me feel like a better person. And excuse me, not feel, know I'm a better person. Like, know my self-worth. And I like that. It makes me feel like I have purpose in the world.
I have a question. If Tiva understood human English, what would you like to say to her?
That's the best question. So if she understood English, I would want to tell her, you don't have to worry about being abandoned ever again. You know, I'm your dad, and I always will be.